Item nine on the agenda, update from staff regarding the lease at Willow's Office Park. Jay left. Kim?
Yes. So Sarah's office has been in this location since 1990. The current lease expires next September 30th of 2019. And in anticipation of that expiration, Sarah has started to take a look at what's in the current vicinity, what's in the market, taking a look at here, starting to assess what our space needs are going to be in the next 5 to 10 years. And CBRE has started to assist us with that process, and they are here to go over some additional information with the board.
So I was told by Gail we have 10 minutes. I talk for a living, so point at me and tell me to cut me off. Thanks for having us in. My name's Andy Schmidt. This is Danielle Shegg. We work out of CB's Walnut Creek office. CB is the world's largest real estate firm. We service 90 of the Fortune 100 companies across the country. We're in a couple hundred countries where we provide services to some of the largest firms globally. We are a full-service real estate firm. So while we do brokerage, we also offer financial modeling and every other real estate facet you can manage, from managing properties to buying of materials, et cetera. We buy so much for so many firms, we do better. So we act as both a brokerage firm as well as a consulting firm, and that's where we've started working with Gail and her team as it relates to understanding the market and what's happening in our current cycle. So what I have up behind us is just a representation of our team. Jeff Birnbaum, who is traveling with his son looking at colleges today, can't be with us. But Jeff and I have been with CB combined for 42 years. I'm in just about my 19th year with CB. All my time has been spent along the greater 680 corridor. So I have worked with owners and owners' reps for that entire time. I know Mr. Holcomb, we were just saying hi. I grew up with his kids, which is great. And Tim obviously is familiar with the market here and has invested in some of the market as well. So it's interesting to connect a lot of the dots as we see here. My world is about one body removed from almost anybody in all these businesses. So it's great as it goes through. We're supported here with Danielle Shegg, who handles our marketing, our team coordination, as well as financial modeling on our team here, construction management, market research, et cetera. So we publish most of the reports that most of the big institutions use for understanding and evaluating markets. And that's where we've begun with Cicero. So we were talking with Gail, and the key objectives that we've outlined up here just to understand renewal strategies or relocation strategies, understand the impact of what those costs would be, how it would model forward on a lease basis versus where we are, an ownership basis versus where we are, improving the member experience, understanding the location, and modernizing the work environment. One thing I'll say is that I'm in and out of spaces on a regular basis. Your space, although functional, is not fresh with what you'd see in new spaces if you were to pick up and move. So that's one thing that Gail and I have been talking about is what do we do and how do we do it and what do we look at and what's important to the employees. The real component of it breaks down into three different scenarios. Is it, do we stay in the current building? Some of the benefits are minimizing disruption. For your visitors, it can be problematic to live through a construction while you're in the space, and so that's something that we'll take into consideration and evaluate both from an operational perspective and impact to business perspective. It's a known location, a lot of new amenities in the area, less capital outlay in some cases because you're here. But there are some risks, though, the disruption of the work, the low leverage with the landlord because they know you're here and they know that you like it, as well as the cost of remodel. Sometimes when you're having to phase a construction, it can cost more because you have to do it in pieces as opposed to just pick up on a weekend and move and start the next Monday.
I had a question for you. I noticed you put the employee disruption risk on the stay here scenario, but I think it's present in the relocate and lease and the relocate and buy, at least from my own experience of doing the box thing and moving.
Yeah.
There's a little productivity hit and otherwise. So it probably runs through all three of those. Would you agree?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I think it's less to, it's a shorter disruption, but it's a different disruption. So when you live through loss of power, fire sprinklers that leak when they're doing work, areas that don't have power, data is going down, et cetera, that can be more common when you deal with a phase construction than if you just pick up and you move to a fully permitted, fully built, fully designed job. So that it's new for visitors, it's kind of new for employees, but as you go through this, there can be some real benefits to employee morale when you pick up and you relocate. You get a newly built space, you have a new feel to it. People can feel like you're investing in them as an employee. As Gail and I talked about, there's benefits to your visitors who know where you are, and so a new location can be problematic. I use the Rossmore example all the time. There's a couple of investment firms that are right outside of Rossmore, and if they were to ever pick up and leave, their employees would, or their visitors would have no idea where they'd be going, right? The Rossmore people come out, they go to that Wells Fargo, they know where it is. They don't want to have to learn a new spot. So take that analogy, and you can kind of run it through. So I'd say there's pluses and minuses to both.
No, that's helpful. Thank you.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah, while we're still in this slide, I'm assuming you won't spend a third of your time on relocate and buy. Just we have, this board has a very real experience in owning this building, and what we went through. Obviously, Tim and Gail are very knowledgeable about that.
Yeah.
I'm assuming we wouldn't spend lots of time.
What Gail had asked us to do, and what I recommend we do, is always have a base case model when you look at the financial impact to any firm, whether it be you or somebody else, that it would be a stay in place and do nothing. And then the other scenarios would include a relocation, an expansion, a purchase, and then we model it to show what the impact would be. So whether there's the desire to truly own or not, I always like to put it down as a model so that you can evaluate it and say you did your homework, and in this case, either there's no inventory, or it's more expensive, or whatever it might be. So I've been here, I've seen the building sold, I knew that you were there, you owned it for many years. Again, I've been here almost 20 years, so I've seen the history there.
I'm only suggesting that a third of your time shouldn't be spent on the buy.
Yeah, no, done, you got it.
Mr. Holcomb.
I actually disagree with that. I've got a more open mind on that. I still think that there is some consideration that should be given to the relocate and buy, just because it's like a homeowner. If you had a bad experience in a home, doesn't mean you're never interested in buying another home. And so I'm not ready to rule that out.
Neither am I. I did some computations on $279 a square foot and how much that is a month and how much that is over a year and what happens after about 5 years of paying that amount of money. And I'm with Jerry on this. There's some advantages to owning. And I want to look at that seriously.
And that's also why it's on the slide, because you know, it's important that the board consider all options and make the most prudent decision that they can for Cicera. One of the things, and Andy can talk a little more about it, is one of the issues with that option is that there's not a whole lot of space out there for us. There is limited availability. You know, it's one thing if you have 2,000 square feet that you're trying to fit into.
No.
But
we're doing 20,
we're looking around 20 or so.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so
I know.
So that's a consideration. But it's on the slide still. We are still taking a look at it. Did you want to comment, Tim?
Yeah.
Okay.
So on the relocate and lease, the benefits, new workplace strategy design, we're seeing a lot of the more modern design within the office space, and that's something that you can build into a relocation because you have the ability to design the space you want as opposed to having slowly grown over time. Right size to the right space, get the rooms correct, the boardroom maybe, if you want to redesign it, that type of deal. It gives you opportunity to really customize the space that you so choose. There are still a lot of landlords in this market that are hungry for transactions and for leases. And you, again, can improve the employee experience. That's the biggest thing in the Bay Area right now. It's about labor. It's about getting the labor. It's about attracting it and retaining it. And the workplace has a significant impact for the employees that will be in the office. On the risks, market timing, we're going to cover that behind this. But as you all know, where we're at in the economy, we've seen continual growth in real estate values. And so at what point does that growth subside? Does it slow down? Does it stop? Does it go backwards? Cost overruns, the biggest challenge that we'd have today in real estate as a whole in the Bay Area, but especially the East Bay, is that the cost to construct and build space is more than what the landlord is typically willing to offer forward.
So are you saying that when you have a client and they want to buy land and build on that land, their own property, that the initial cost in almost every deal you've done has increased and it has never stayed the same? I mean, so if somebody says, I'm going to build this at $4 a square foot, mm-hmm. and they get halfway through and they say, we can't do $4 a square foot, we got to go to $425 a square foot. Okay. Are you saying that does or doesn't happen? What's the percentage of that happening?
There's not a lot of construction in this market. There's been 40 million square feet of new commercial office added in the Bay Area, and it's primarily in the cycle since 2008. It's primarily in San Francisco down to the Valley, and it is all corporate tech-type business that's really driving it. The rents.
What about on this side of the
Bay? Yeah, so the rents, so where I'm going to go this is that the rents in this market have grown, but they haven't grown exponentially. And so the cost to build new product and rent it, it doesn't jive. There's a loss. So you haven't seen speculative construction. You've seen projects change, like, for example, 1200 Concord, that was Wells Fargo that became vacant. The landlord bought it at less than what it would cost them to build the new construction. So on a build-to-suit, typically, there's a contract that's put in saying, here's the cost, here's what the rent's going to be, and that's what that contract is, and a build-to-suit. If the cost overruns are there, there's usually a contingency the developer has. If you act as your own GC and your own developer, then that's on you as that. But in a build-to-suit situation, that's an entirely different model subject to all of the variables that would go into that analysis.
All right.
But where I was going is that for the first time in my 18 years, we now see costs exceeding that of what they are offered by the landlord to construct new space. And so you either have to value engineer the design of your space, or you have to come out of pocket for some of the costs to actually construct the office improvements within there. So typically, landlord will give you X number of dollars to build the space, and if it's enough, it's enough, and if not, it's not. So part of what we're doing also, Gail and I have talked a couple of times about hiring a project manager. And we are considering third-party project managers that will review those costs, will help design the space, help build the budgets to ensure that they're competitively bid and that the costs are transparent, but multiple bids so that you're not just taking one cost, but cost for furniture, cost for cabling, cost for audiovisual, cost for drywall, things like that. So the partnership there, we've interviewed a couple, and they're very senior teams that do this for a living and build out space, and so I think it'd be wise for us to partner on that front as well.
And we feel that a project manager is necessary regardless of whether we stay here or go somewhere else. So someone to assist with that.
And then obviously the third scenario, relocate and buy a building. I guess we could technically say you could buy this building back to you, so that could go into that mix, so it doesn't necessarily need to go. But again, some of the benefits are similar to that of the lease front. On the downside risk is that you play landlord again at this time, and if you have vacancy, you have to fill it up. There's capital costs to do that. And on a ownership perspective, it's typically more difficult to be elastic with your needs. If you need to lease space and you need to grow, it's easy to work with the landlord if they have space to take it. When you own it and the space is leased, it's difficult with a lease in place to just kick a tenant out and say, I want this additional space. So there are some pluses and there are some minuses, but that's part of the valuation when we look at the financial matrix of how we are going to look at this and what makes the most sense.
On this latter discussion, my lean is to where John talked about, which is that we sort of have the experience of owning the building, being the landlord, and you know, the reality is it has to meet the fiduciary standards that we have for judging any investment asset. So I would want our investment group, I assume Gil will involve them, but I would want our investment group to be intimately involved in any relocate and buy scenario, because you know, one, it's a real asset. It has to meet the standards and the benchmarks that we've set for that asset class. And two is, I guess I'd want to know, and it sounds like you're in a great position to tell us this, what the real costs of managing a property are. You know, so that in the lease example you gave, if I were managing it, I would want the right to relocate any tenant, large or small, if I could negotiate that, because for the very reason you said, it's a little tough when you want to grow, you got to move somebody. I've been moved a lot. I'm in a small space, so I know how. I've been on the working end of that, but it's from a flexibility and ownership standpoint, it would be very important. And I also think that the lesson learned, unless Gil tells me something different, is that you'd want to professionally manage a building, because it, you know, it's a full-time job in addition to the one you have as CEO. So we have to build all that in to understand the real cost of that and to meet the investment expectation at the same time. So that's a higher mountain for me. But
yeah, I'm just throwing that out. The ownership front, and I don't mean to cut you off, the ownership front has been impacted by some of the new tax code as well this year, which allows some accelerated depreciation and non-structural improvements. and the capitalization of leases. So in 19, there's a new GAAP FASB requirement that leases are all capitalized. And so as you look at that front, it has impacted a lot of these larger local firms to take an ownership position since they're capitalizing the lease anyways, and they can depreciate a vast amount of what they put in the building. So the inventory is really tight on a purchase perspective for that reason. Plus, that 40 million square feet of new construction has been outside of our market because, again, our rents haven't been high enough to justify new construction.
Gotcha.
You know, we have no tax issue here, so.
Correct.
That's not an issue for us. You know, just the sort of final comment, this using 10 million as a working number, that was the working number we used for the value of this building, against 8.6 billion. It's the time frame, amount of time necessary for landlord responsibilities. I'm assuming that's the line item on risk that you're really, that I'm focusing on anyway. Does it make good sense? And we clearly came to the conclusion it didn't. Maybe it does on the next one. Particularly if we were able to sub out, if you will, agent out the landlord, the management role. But if we manage it, that was just not a good use of the time of our key people. That's what it boiled down to.
I agree with you on that. That was one of the issues when we decided to sell this building that sold yes. me on selling this building. But in buying a new building and having our own, And I agree with your other statement. We will have to hire somebody to run it because I don't want Gail or any of our staff to have to deal with that problem. And I'm clear on that.
Build that into the buy part.
But you can build it into the buy thing when you think about it. But when you start talking dollars and cents, and that's what I hope happens here is you tell us what a building that we would need would cost on the market. You've showed us the rental things, but give us the cost of it, and then add in having to have somebody manage it, not us manage it, and add in what you think it would cost to create our space workable for our employees, and what other costs would happen if we bought that building, so that I get a clear picture of what the dollars and cents. For me, it's got to be dollars and cents when I look at it at black and white. And then I can take that and I can run it out 5 years, 10 years. I can run. I really need that basic figure stuff for me to help me make a decision. Thank you.
Sure.
And just so we're clear, too, when we did own this building, it was professionally managed. Right. We had Transwestern that assisted with that. But,
yeah, but we have
there's still a lot of time that, you know, that we spent exactly. on this building.
I do.
And
yeah,
so we're definitely going to have the dollars and cents comparison, but also a consideration of these other items as well. Because,
yeah.
I mean, our primary objective is to run this pension plan and to pay benefits and to invest the money and those things and not necessarily you know, having a $10 million building that we're going to be spending a lot of time on. So, you know, it's all going to get factored into the analysis.
Good.
Okay.
So what the next slide represents is a dummy down transaction process timeline backing into the lease expiration of next year. The initial portion of it, if you look at the little icons, understanding and assessing the market conditions, defining the business requirements and space programming, is the first analyzation period, and that's where we're at with Gail at this point. We are just beginning to understand what opportunities are in the greater Concord area, kind of where we are right now. No specific opportunities at this point. We're gonna be starting that process on a go-forward basis for both lease and ownership perspective. But you'll tour alternatives, understand proposals, meaning what are the economics each landlord is willing to offer, help design a space, and then build the financial model. And at that point, that model will represent fairly accurate numbers as it relates to those different scenarios. So we need to understand what the inventory is, what the alternatives are, what the space design would be, and then what are the economics of that. And at that point, you sign a letter of intent, which would be a non-binding agreement or a non-binding understanding of terms at which we would then follow the execution phase, which would be negotiate the lease contract and construct the improvements. So that is all to follow on there. So those are the key milestone dates that we're working forward to. We're hoping towards the end of the year we can identify the property that works for Cicero.
Is
just a quick high level. We talked a little bit about the Bay Area. The rents in the Bay Area have grown. I came in at the tail end of the dot-com cycle, which was challenging. Watched it go up, watched it come back down, and now I'm watching it go back up. The rents in the Bay Area, you can see on the very right, have gone up, but the rents along the 680 corridor have not gone up commensurate with what you've seen in San Francisco and other parts, and that has primarily to do with the amount of tech that the Bay Area is. Whether we know it or not, I think someday we'll look back, and again, it's 18 years for me, but you'll look back and say this was kind of an amazing period of time in which we kick-started in the Bay Area the global tech growth renaissance. It's amazing if you see what's going on in the Valley and what some of these other companies are doing, buying properties on water so they can have water transportation, buying properties on water so they can launch airplanes and launch the drones and whatnot. It's amazing if you fast forward what's coming. This is an amazing time, but it's impactful because the traffic and all the big tech companies are trying to figure out, how do I get real estate in this area, and then how do I get people there? It becomes a labor. It's all about the labor for all the tech. Is you go into San Francisco, you can see people on the corner giving out breakfast burritos saying, come talk to our company versus this one. It's I mean, I'm not joking. It's pretty amazing to see it.
Which corner was that?
I don't want to tell you. So what I put up here was the second quarter. Is probably better on your slide, but this is the second quarter trends. Again, technology companies are driving the office market across the Bay Area. Significant new construction in this cycle, except for the 680 corridor. We've had a lot of retail and multifamily along our quarter, but we haven't had any office. In fact, you saw Chevron lose 572,000 square feet to open doors for Veranda. A couple of years ago, we sold the AT&T building down in Santa Monica, which is 2 million square feet, a user building, came back. And down in the Tri-Valley, you've seen over 2 million square feet of properties sell to owner users. So you've actually seen a multi-tenant opportunity lease basis shrink. So in this cycle, the overall amount of properties for lease has decreased, which is mind-boggling when you look just one bridge away what's happening elsewhere.
So there's been a decrease in owner-operated properties, is what you're saying?
Owner-operated has increased the amount of multi-tenant for lease properties, which is what we'd look at when you look at an investor-owned property, has decreased. So you've seen lots of growth down in the Tri-Valley on an ownership perspective. Flexible space continues to dominate the trend, meaning a lot of these companies want to sign a lease that's 5 years, not 10 years or 20 years. And you know, 10 years ago, 10-year lease terms, and 15 years ago, 20-year lease terms were real common. Business changes and business needs change and space changes. Right now, the big trend is open space, open, 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 and no private offices. And you start to hear the rumblings from the big tech companies saying, well, maybe this is too open. So things change and everybody wants some of that flexibility. Strong buyer appetite here in the Bay Area continues to put upward pressure on lease rates. You have foreign capital, you have outside capital buying in the Bay Area because rents continue to grow. And when they say, where's the stock market driven? It's the FANG. Where's FANG? It's in San Francisco and the peninsula, so we want our money here. This is the best place, the best opportunity for us. Improvement costs we talked about have gone up. The fires had a big impact on the labor for trades up in the North Bay last year. And so we've seen Houston and then the North Bay, the material costs and the labor costs have been much more impactful to us here. We've really felt the loss of labor in here, and so you've seen costs gone up. But fundamentals remain really strong in the Bay Area. We don't see anything slowing down anytime soon. I wish I could say that we did, but we don't. Office rents, this is a historical chart that just shows where they were. The top number is the Class A office rents. The bottom number is the Class B office rents. And what I went ahead and did is built in a forecast. The following page in your book actually shows by submarket the annualized predicted forecast rent growth for what we predict using our econometric advisors. You can see it's somewhat flat on the 18 going forward. Originally, we had predicted a slowdown in late 18, and then it was mid-19, and now it's mid-20, and we just see the fundamentals continue to remain really strong. Employment's high, and rents continue to climb up. So right now, we expect that rents will remain relatively flat with a slight uptick. We don't see any huge spikes coming in this part of the Bay Area.
Andy, can you summarize what Class A and Class B
properties are? Sure, that's a good question.
Are.
This is a Class B building. Typically, a B building is a 1, 2, or 3-story wood frame structure, wood deck. If you were to jump up and down, you could hear it. You could feel the plywood move a little bit. Class A buildings typically differ because they are steel with concrete decks. They have different amenities on site, so food service. They have conference rooms on site for all of the tenants. They have on-site property management to, when the bulb comes out, you make the call, or you put it in on your technology system, and next thing you know, an engineer's here fixing your light bulb. Class B typically have off-site property management. They have a day porter who will come in and out. Restrooms and corridors, although they're ADA, they're not been invested in it. It's kind of, let's repair it when it breaks. Class A, the owners are looking to see rental rate growth, and so they try to improve the experience to the tenant by providing a lot of opportunities to use the building outside of the space. So if you've ever been to a nice building that has a nice lounge area or a conference area or a fitness center, things like that are included in Class A's.
Andy, my direct experience is with apartments, but a fairly common one, not necessarily with the Bay Area, is that you start with a Class B building, buy it and upgrade it to a very high level Class B or a low level Class A. Is any of that happening in office?
We see it here with them taking care of some of the R&M that needs to be
done. Do you see this particular building becoming Class A?
No, it will never be A because it's wood-framed and wood-decked. They're trying to fix what needs to be fixed, but you do see a lot of the value-add investors coming in right now, and on the Class A front, whether it be Concord, Pleasant Hill, Walnut Creek, the Tri-Valley, the A owners, it's what I would call a flight to amenitization right now. Everybody is trying to add amenities to it, so in improving the common corridors, the restrooms, the conference rooms. So you see the value add. But the B's in this cycle have not seen the rent growth that the A's have, and therefore the owners can't afford to invest a lot of money into the B's. And so you see minor things being done, but not major overhauls. On the A's, you see more major overhauls because, frankly, their money is 3-year, 5-year money. They buy it, they do it, they get the rents, and then they capitalize it.
What's a building that's a Class A that you've seen that happen in the corridor?
Probably the best one here in Concord would be the Bank of America campus that was vacated just at the BART station. And so Swift Real Estate Partners bought that at $93 a square foot for 1.2 million square feet here. That's well below replacement cost. Bank of America stayed in half of it, and Swift, local developer, took back half of the property. And as part of their transition property, they took a 1980s call center building, the 13-story silver building, $1,655 grand. And completely redid the lobby with marble, granite, food, I mean, everything.
Okay, that gave me an idea. Okay.
Yeah, really nice project. Yeah, Jerry.
Andy, on your slide up here, 5 years ago you were giving the same presentation to people, and you had a 5-year forecast at that time.
Yeah.
How did that 5-year period compare to your forecasts?
Pretty close, actually. We might have actually undervalued some of the rental growth that has taken
place. So you place a fairly high degree of reliability on
I do, and actually it's a good question to flip to the next slide, Jerry. This actually shows back to what it was. And here's our forecast of what those growths are. I don't think many of us, you know, underwrote 17% rent growth in 2015 in Concord, and then 8 and 9. I think a lot of us, when you look at the rent growth, you've done this for a long time in real estate, you typically underwrite middle, low, single digits, and if you're trying to stretch to value on the investment, you do that a little bit. But some of the rent growth that we've seen, double digit year over year over year, is pretty amazing.
So the reliability then you place on this, actually it suggests you expect a certain amount of flattening. Some continuing increase, but then flattening in the next few years.
Primarily because there's no new construction added. So while you continue to see construction elsewhere, we have been the recipient of professional services businesses, not tech. The East Bay here, the 680 corridor has no tech. Oakland in this cycle has seen a renaissance for demand because, frankly, if you were to look at the Bay Area from up high and you look down on it, if you were to parachute in, you'd pick Oakland. You wouldn't pick San Francisco. Transportation, location, access to more bodies, Oakland's just a better spot. And so when Oakland City Center building sold, you started to see that tech demand come over this way. In the last cycle, everybody skipped Oakland and came straight out to the 680. And so in the 05, 06, 07 grow up, nobody went to Oakland. Safety reasons, housing, whatever it was. But in the last cycle that we're in right now, we're seeing a huge stop off in Oakland becoming more desirable. And so you're seeing tons of new construction in Oakland. If you drive on Highway 24 and go to San Francisco, you can count about 15 cranes. That's because the demand is there, whereas the demand out here is not. So.
Okay.
That helps.
Thanks.
No new construction. That's the big limiting factor here. I can kind of zoom through the rest of this. This is just an example of what we track for tenants looking for space in the market. You can see it's a very diverse base out in the 680. If this was from San Jose or down in Palo Alto Peninsula, 90% tech, a lot of bigger users, but I'll kind of jump through that. Financial modeling is something we rely really heavily upon in what we do. We don't like to make impulsive decisions. We like to give numbers so that our clients can make informed, educated decisions. I love the numbers. My job makes me a people person, but really I'm a number person. I would rather stare at numbers all day. I should have been an accountant. But that's something we're going to rely on heavily on. Gail understands and has made it clear to us that it's very important that a well-educated, fairly accurate financial model is developed so that when a recommendation is brought to the board is making it with pure transparency as opposed to just an emotional, I want to go here. And I think lastly, in this cycle, you can see on the right, these are the largest transactions done in Concord, and I've been a part of all of them with T-Mobile and Cirrus, who here is now 90,000 square feet moving to Concord, and a handful of these other transactions. 42 years here, 52 million square feet. I love what I do. Jeff, my partner, is very good at it, and we have a lot of fun with our clients. We get to meet diverse folks and help everybody, and we learn from those experiences moving forward. So we're very excited for the opportunity to assist you, and it's great to see it just getting started. I think there's going to be some good decisions to make in the future. So thank you. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Any questions? Been very helpful. I receive your quarterly newsletter, your rent rate survey throughout. It's a stellar publication. It's been very helpful to me.
Along with your relocation?
I've relocated a few times, Jerry, actually.
Yeah. A lot of people don't
know.
I was able to successfully
negotiate.
But you haven't told a lot of people you're in the witness protection program, too.
No, but they have a marvelous ability to assimilate and publish data. Highly accurate. It's very, very reliable. I've been very pleased with that. And I'm pleased with the presentation today. For me, this is going to come down to a location that is user-friendly for our actives and retirees. But to me, equally as important for our employees is to have a location that isn't isolated somewhere, that is a place where folks can walk outside and find, you know, lunch or other spots so that they're not isolated and having to drive everywhere. Been there, done that myself. So those are the biggest drivers for me. It's just going to come down to that kind of a location.
I think it's important to also say that we will be talking with this landlord and making sure that there's alternatives outside of this landlord so that we apply appropriate leverage, that if the decision is to stay here, we know what our cases are to relocate, and you build that into the base case. So you don't want to leave this landlord out of the picture. You want to kind of leverage everybody together and create the most favorable transaction.
Agreed.
For Cicero.
So I understand the aesthetics part and being in an area with employees, but again, I'm a numbers person.
Yeah.
And so I roughly I called and asked, what's the square footage that we use? And we use about 21,000 square feet. So I took the top of the A building, 279 a square foot, multiplied that times 21,000. I got $58,000 a month for rent. And then you do that over a year, you're over $700,000 a year. So those were the things that, like, well, I'm a homeowner.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I don't deal in millions. So it kind of set me back a little bit. So that's, I need to overcome that to be comfortable if we decide to go the other way.
So I think the important thing to note here is that the rents in this building are going to go up probably 20%. Regardless, so you're coming off of a 10-year lease, which is below.
And I don't know what we pay a square foot now.
You're well below market.
$1.79.
We're below market.
Your current rent today at this building is $2.25.
Okay.
And so we might be able to improve upon that through negotiations, but it's a factor of cost. So no matter what happens, you are definitely looking at an increase in cost. Whether you stay, whether you move sideways, or whether you improve the quality of the product.
Yeah.
And so that's something that should be built in, and we've talked about in the budgets, no matter what.
And Andy said the current rent here is $2.25. We're actually paying $1.79.
We're $1.79 is current.
$1.72, and then possible, you know, spaces here available are the $2.25 that he's mentioning.
And keeping in mind that lease that you came off of was structured when the building was sold such that you could control your operating costs for an extended period of time. And so that lease, I think even when it was signed, you locked in a lower than market rate so that you could exit the building and control your costs. So that's always good when you have a 10-year period, but then when it expires, you deal with the ramifications of a market rental rate.
Got it.
So I hope that helps.
And I wanted to thank Andy and Danielle for being here today. I also wanted to get a sense, as we're looking at different properties and looking at the space here and looking at our space needs and trying to figure out some answers to some of these questions that we have, I thought it would be helpful to get feedback from the board on what your preferences are and if there are things, you know, that are no-go and, you know, what, you know, what some, just some of your preferences.
So, I'll just piggyback on what I said. This is going to sound perhaps odd, but I wouldn't want us to chase the best deal available and then have it be in a location that's particularly unsuitable for what we do. You know, we're in the service business. We deliver benefits and services. And so we need to be in a location that's both ideal for that and, as I said, ideal for our employees. We have a large number of employees and I want to have that experience be good, because if they're in a good place and happy, they're going to do a lot better job. I think we've learned that, you know, over time. So to me, I'm not interested in chasing to the end of the earth the best possible deal for the last half cent, because the qualitative things matter. So I'm just throwing that out there.
From my perspective, parking is critical, mainly because, as Scott mentioned, the service industry that we technically are, where we need to make it accessible. I attend meetings all over Concord and Walnut Creek, and parking is a pain.
Yes.
In most office buildings, because they meet their compact parking requirements, and even though I drive a small car, those are small spaces, and then you have to pay to get in and out, or you have to get it validated. So to me, parking is an issue. There's also a public perception. We are a public agency. We oversee a retirement fund, and sometimes when I go up to Sacramento and I walk into CalPERS building, it's just like, whoa, this is a Taj Mahal, you know?
Yeah,
and this is how they're spending. No wonder, you know, they have this unfunded liability. So I think it's important that, you know, we're not aspiring for this necessarily a type A building.
Only 350.
A safe location, a clean location. You know, I'm happy right where we are as well. I don't love, as we mentioned before, I don't love this boardroom particularly. I don't feel, I never know who's behind me, what they're doing.
No bunny ears today.
That's right.
Okay.
Now, so again, to me, the accessibility is critical, and parking, and then public perception.
That's a good point.
For me, and talking about security is an issue for me. I want to make sure it's a secure building. That staff can get in easily and out easily, but nobody else can have access. And also, when we do a lobby area, securing the lobby area for staff, I would be, and also the interview rooms. Our interview rooms are open, and somebody in an interview room could go off, and there's no immediate help. And that would be an issue for me, is the safety of the building. But my first issue, again, is dollars and cents. I mean,
one comment for that is that typically the Class A buildings have on-site 24/7 security that's included in the rent. So although you're paying more, you have security guard that's on-site.
We visit some fund managers, we see that.
Yeah, so just keep that in mind. Sometimes you get what you pay for.
But you also have to keep in mind, no denigration intended, but what kind of security level you're getting at those buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Those are not the same kind of individuals that you might expect. They're paying for a lower level of security.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a certain amount that would be available to you.
I was kind of intrigued with the idea of being close to BART. I'm not sure how many of our employees would BART into work, or even our clients might BART to the office. But just curious if there's an interest or a need for that.
An excellent question.
It's something that we, you know, there's not a lot of our employees that wouldn't typically use BART. There are some properties that do offer a shuttle service to BART. I mean, so that's one option as well. But yeah, I mean, we're looking at accessibility and if folks are taking the bus here or, you know.
Also, power grid. If the electricity goes out or something happens, we need to fire up on our on an alternative system.
Or close to the fire department.
What do you mean, like a generator?
A generator.
It's a big cost item. There are buildings that have generators, backup generators for things like data centers and whatnot.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's a very different thing to be providing electricity for the entire space.
You know what I meant.
Oh, no, no.
I meant to have access for the computer systems and that, not the lighting. And
okay, I mean, I'm just saying there are different levels of that kind of backup that you're talking about.
Those are all good points, and we're going to put them on our wish list of items to locate at the buildings.
I'd offer two. One of them Scott already made, but part of my various careers got spent in a nice, beautiful building, but it was way away from everything else.
Yeah.
And you having to drive for almost anything was added half an hour each way to lunch. For example, if you wanted to go out to lunch. So being relatively close to walkable facilities, very important. The other is that this is where employees spend a third of their life. The idea of huge open floors has just been incredibly unappealing to me. Now, we may get a variety of reactions on that, but having facilities that actual employees like, I would put fairly high.
So, Candace, after we take down the county building, can we put up a Cicera building?
That's going to be a lovely little park. Yeah, you guys should have. We could have added another floor for Cicera in the county building. The
parking's terrible down there.
Yeah,
the parking would be
terrible. Actually, you know what's available, Jerry, is there's a group in Martinez that wants to save the old jail.
Oh, I know.
There you go.
Perfect spot. Perfect spot for
Cicera. It's got security.
I don't want to battle those.
Lots of security, right?
Lots of happy memories in that building.
You know, going on John's point about the employees being happy, is there any way we can involve our employees in this process at any point to get feedback or a survey perhaps on, you know, environment that they might like more than others?
How about paint colors and carpets? I don't know. It's hard. I mean, it's hard because it's our role. And again, I would love to include the employees, but the challenge is that we have this fiduciary responsibility to make the best cost-effective choice, the most important, you know, access for members, things like that. To me, it would be challenging to add another layer into that. I'm not saying it's impossible, and I don't mean to in any way say I don't value the importance of employees weighing in. I'm just not sure that there would be the same objectives and goals because we have sort of defined responsibilities.
I think there's a way to do that at a different level. I agree. You don't. Sorry, it's tough to make these things available. Carpet colors, and we're going to put that to a vote for the entire staff. You're never going to get any agreement. But I think there's a way to try and get input on basic kinds of things, because I think some of the same things would come up for them. Accessibility, parking, a few other things.
Proximity to services,
where
food,
it might be. I think they would have interest in that, and it would be important to include them.
I think our interests are aligned, though. Like John, and we've all talked about it, I think we are in alignment that from a location standpoint, it's as important for our employees as it is to the people we serve. I think there's a dual,
Well, my retirees would love to have easy parking.
Yeah. I think it's so. I think I like your idea, but I think we're also taking it into account. And I think that the idea that Rusty brought up, which was maybe assessing whether and to what extent we have, a number of employees using BART, for instance, that might help drive a decision whether to be closer to BART or not. Not so, those are important, but they're employee-centric questions.
But we're making assumptions, so, and those assumptions may be correct, but if we could just get some feedback from the employees, perhaps a simple survey and so forth about what matters, and those may be in alignment with what we're thinking, but you give folks the opportunity to be engaged in the process, I think that'll have that much more meaning, and if they are happy in the new environment, then I think it's reasonable to expect the productivity and sense of well-being would be improved.
I don't have an issue with a survey at all. I think that's highly appropriate. Yeah.
I agree with Dave because
you bring the employees in just for the overlay of accessibility, parking, I mean, the location of getting there. I think that's a big thing for employees in the morning when you go to work. I mean, there's an accident, it's ruins your day, basically.
Right.
I mean,
especially if you're in it.
Have different answers.
And at the last all-staff meeting, I did talk to employees about this because obviously it's coming up, and I talked to them about how I am going to be talking with the board about it, and we had a little bit of a discussion. I mean, this is a huge thing, and even though sometimes, you know, good change is still change, right? And so one of the most important things with that is communication, and so a survey about kind of basic preferences, you know, that's...
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Sure.
Good idea. Being persistent.
And I will mention with the public perception part of it, whether we stay or go to a different property, there's not a whole lot that we can do about the lobby space and what that's going to look like. And I think that some folks have an idea of, oh, government agency, they should be in a 1950s asbestos-ridden, you know, decrepit-looking building or something. That makes sense, right?
Jail building.
Not the county building.
That's the jail.
If the numbers are right, Jerry's okay with it.
If it has the military drab paint and carpet, then it meets the government expectation, yes.
And so here, you know, they're actually going to be doing some upgrading to the lobby here, or whether we look at some other place, there's not a whole lot that we can do about what that is going to look like, right? But within our suite, within our office, you know, are we going to have Carrara marble? Are we going to have, you know, the finishes, we have a lot of control over that and the cost related to that. And I'm not looking at having, you know, a luxurious looking whatever. That's not our goal. Our goal is to have a functional space that our employees can work in. So Gail, I did want to mention that.
I'll add that if you look at rental rates throughout the entire Bay Area, Concord, it is probably the cheapest rental rate you can get anywhere in the Bay Area for the quality of space you get. It doesn't get less costly. So it's not like you go over the hill somewhere else, you're going to pay more because it's newer construction and it costs more to build. So we are at the bottom of the cost here in Concord. So
yeah, I mean, you drive 4 miles down the road to Walnut Creek and you get into a different cost here. And I'm not sure you do any...
$1.50 a square foot more. I mean, because you pay for parking. So.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to parking, service parking is definitely a priority for us. This out here is what they call service parking, so that members can come and park. They're not having to go across the street to some, you know, multi-story parking garage.
Yes.
You know, we don't want to do that. Why have our, you know, members do that? So that's also having some, you know, surface parking. There might be a garage as well, but that's definitely a consideration.
Typically, that's one of the factors that gets tossed into proposals, and most often it's X number of parking places per square foot or per 1,000 square feet or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can get really blinded by that because you have no idea what the conditions are for the parking. Mm-hmm. So it's something to keep in mind rather than just that, you know, 5 spaces per 10,000 feet or whatever the heck it is.
And a lot of that can be negotiated when we go through the process. And luckily, you know, I would think that we would be considered a good tenant, you know, as far as credit worthy and, you know.
We meet our obligations. We're credit worthy. We do.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to present to you today.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you. So going forward, you know, this is happening in rather short order. So I wanted to get a sense from the board of the level of input you want in this. Would you like to have an ad hoc committee formed with a few members to work with Gail and her team? Or are people more comfortable, or are people comfortable just saying staff, go forward and come back
I'm
to us?
I'm fine with the latter.
I am too. I think just I'd like a regular update. It's just part of your staff report, unless there's something big. Obviously, where we need a full presentation decision. But no, I'm fine with having you have the leeway.
Yeah, and I'd leave it to Gail if you felt at some point you want board involvement, or we're getting this timeline's pretty compressed. I hope everybody appreciates that. This is really a compressed time frame. So, it'd be in your judgment when and if you think, if you thought an ad hoc committee was appropriate, that would be the time to pull the trigger, I guess.
Okay.
I'm comfortable with what we're doing.
Okay.
And everyone's had a chance to have their say here.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So I haven't added much because most of you have said what I'm thinking. I do like this general area twofold. You know, employees put in for jobs here. They think this is where they're working. So I would, you know, and you make life decisions where you buy houses where, and what have you. So if we move to San Ramon or El Cerrito, you know, that would be very impactful. Plus, there's the cost element and the location to services that several of you have mentioned, and as someone who works at a sewage treatment plant, there's not a lot of restaurants and dining options around. So I'm very envious that you don't have to drive several miles.
Bar's pretty low.
The bar's pretty low for me. So I take a taco truck, but they don't even want to come over. So anyway, that's my two cents.
So one thing is, when it comes to the boardroom, I think that we're looking at a redesign, whether we stay here or go elsewhere,
yes,
to, you know, increase security, increase, you know, technology, do some different things. Not going overboard, I don't want to do that, but having an appropriate level of technology and security is important. Now, when it comes to board redesign, you know, there could be 12 different opinions on some of these things, and I could definitely come back and we could have some different discussions about some different, you know, finalist designs and that kind of thing. But I was just curious if the board was comfortable with me discussing, you know, running by some cursory designs and that kind of thing with the board chair, or if you felt like that's more of a full board discussion that you'd like to have.
Go ahead and bring it back. I think you've heard our concerns about security, efficiency, and you know, things like that.
That board chair, though?
Yeah. I mean, if it was, you know, 9 months from now, maybe, right?
Maybe, yeah. But I'm just concerned about what his standard is, where he works.
I actually like our boardroom.
The boardroom is very nice.
Yeah, I actually like our boardroom. So.
Well, it's a good thing that, you know, he wears the fiduciary hat, and
yes,
he's here for Cicera when he's
I
here.
Am. 100%.
Okay.
So what was the timeline on that? When were you thinking of
doing
the redesign? Sorry.
Soon, like now, we're looking
so
at
whether
things.
We stay here or not, we're going to go ahead and do this.
Well, I think that the boardroom plays a big piece in how much square footage we might need and that kind of thing. And so it's something, you know, looking at our needs for the office space and the boardroom, that's something that we're doing now and kind of laying out some things. And then when we have some finalist properties, we're actually going to be looking at space plans and seeing how things would fit in there to also kind of tighten up the square footage that we need. So when it comes to the boardroom, that's something that I'm already starting to take a look at. And I've actually had administrators from other systems send me pictures of their boardrooms and to get some different ideas and ideas on how that process worked. And I've heard stories from having, you know, the full board involved in, you know, the smallest detail versus, you know. So today was kind of having a discussion with you to get a sense of, you know, how much involvement you'd like to have. So I think I'm pretty clear on that now.
Yeah. Cool. I'm sitting here right now saying if we stay here, if you just reoriented it this way, had no one back there and had all the audience here and brought in some tech equipment, I'd be fine. I mean, it could be that simple as well. There's some real basic things we could do. Uh-huh. So I've already redesigned it. We're done.
Yeah.
Done.
Well, that was easy.
Yeah. Go for it.
Andy, you got that right.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
Check.
So time from going forward, what I'm looking at is probably in the next few months, there's going to be something coming back to the to the board, pretty partially baked to get some direction going forward. So
short fuse.
Yeah, because as you see in the timeline, we're looking at having, you know, documents executed, you know, in the March timeframe. So.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Excellent. All right. Moving on.
Thanks, Andy.
You're